Make Walters your spot, not only before and after every game at Nationals Park. Walters also is right by Audi Field, and DC United, the Washington Spirit, and the DC Defenders are all in season.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Swung on. Broken bat looper to left. It's going to fall in front of Eddie Rosario. A base hit on a single to left by Fitzgerald, and the Giants lead 2-1.
Here's the pitch to Ahmed. And a line drive. Going to be a base hit over the leaping Garcia, and it dunks into right center field, and Ahmed has spoiled Corbin again. Coming in to score is Chapman. It's 6-1 Giants.
And welcome to Nats Chat for Thursday, April 11th. 2024, along with MassInSports.com, Nationals insider Mark Zuckerman was at Oracle Park in San Francisco. I'm Al Galdi, host of the Al Galdi podcast. The Nationals on Wednesday were denied a three-game sweep at the San Francisco Giants via a 7-1 loss, ending the Nats' three-game winning streak. The Nats now are 5-7 in this regular season. If you would like to wish someone who listens to this podcast a happy birthday or a congratulations or a get well soon or whatever, please consider a shout out on the Nats Chat podcast, similar to a greeting on the Nationals Park scoreboard. Email Tim Shovers for more details. The email address is natschatpodcast@gmail.com. And we have another shout out coming up later in the show. So you look at the Nats 12 games into this regular season. The Nats over their five wins have totaled 28 runs. The Nats over their seven losses have totaled just 18 runs. It's a funny deal. The Nats so far when they win actually score at a pretty good clip, more than five runs per game. But Mark, when the Nats lose, they like barely score, slightly more than two runs per game. And the Nats on Wednesday barely scored, just the one run.
And I feel like a lot of those games also include some very low pitch counts from posing starters. And that was the case with Jordan Hicks in this one. I mean, you get Joey Gallo's homer in the second, and what else happened the rest of the day at the plate for them? Not a whole lot. If your offensive highlight of the game besides that was the bunt single and stolen base by your catcher, Drew Millis, you know it hasn't been a great day at the plate for you. No offense to Drew Millis, who had a nice game there in his one game back up in the big leagues. But I don't know. This is a lineup that we discussed the other night. They can do it a lot of different ways. They have the ability to hit for some power, but they know that's not the way they're going to win games for the most part. They have to get on base, and then they have to use their legs and try to manufacture some runs. And there just weren't that many opportunities to do that in this one because Hicks, while he was all over the place, it felt like at times, he was, I guess you call it effectively wild because they never looked comfortable at the plate against him.
Yeah, I think what's a little disturbing about some of these bad offensive performances is that they're not coming against like ace level starters. The Nats are making some guys look like ace level starters when they aren't. And you just wonder what is going to happen when this team does start to face some of the better starting pitchers in MLB. Not that there are, you know, that many like true aces left, but you know, there are like high level starting pitchers, and the Nats really haven't faced many, if any, so far this season. The Nats in this game, one run, four hits, two walks, 0-for-4, with runners in scoring position. Mark mentioned the Giants starting pitcher Jordan Hicks, one run in six innings. And really, the only offensive bright spot, I guess, save for the Drew Millis bunt and stolen base, was the Joey Gallo homer. Gallo, as an at starting first baseman and cleanup batter, 1-for-3 with a solo home run and a walk. Gallo, in an at one run second, had a leadoff full count home run to right field for a 1-0 Nats lead. And Gallo, in the top of the fourth, drew a walk. It is still so early in the season, so to get like sucked into stats isn't the way to go. But I have to note this. Joey Gallo already is living up to his reputation as a three true outcome batter. Homers, walks, strikeouts. His slash line for this regular season already, 12 games in, batting average of 179, on base percentage of 319, slugging percentage of 487. Like from the get-go, Joey Gallo is being Joey Gallo.
If those were the numbers he ends up with at the end of the season, would any of that surprise you? No, that's like exactly who he's supposed to be. And it's so funny because a couple games into the season, you're saying to yourself, oh my God, this guy can't do anything. He looks lost up there. He had a bad spring. He's never going to figure it out. And then he gets hot and he starts doing what he does and launching some balls. And then he has these games where he hits the home run, but there isn't a whole lot else that goes on them as well. So he's kind of been exactly who he was supposed to be, for better and for worse, I suppose. I think the key here, and it's not his fault in this case. I mean, it's a scoreless game in the second. He hits a towering home run, give him the lead. That's good. You just hope that when he does connect on these, that enough of them are really meaningful home runs. And in this case, I guess it was meaningful at the time, but at the end of the day, it's completely meaningless in a 7-1 loss. Hopefully there are more of these that come later in games, in significant moments that help them win some games, and then I think it'll all be worth it. And you deal with the bad stuff that comes with the good stuff.
The other interesting item with the Nats offense on Wednesday was Drew Millis. So the Nats, for a third time in three games, had a different starting catcher, and this time it was Drew Millis. The Nats on Wednesday morning announced having recalled Millis from AAA Rochester. This as the corresponding roster moved to optioning pitcher Yoan Adone to Rochester, as in the same Yoan Adone who started the previous game for the Nats, the 5-3 win at the Giants late night on Tuesday night. We'll get to that in a moment. K-Bet Ruiz was not feeling well on Wednesday, so Millis got called up, got the started catcher, number 8 batter, 1-for-3 with a bunt single and a stolen base, and both things happened in the same inning. I mean, you noted this on X. Like, have we ever seen that before from a Nats catcher? Millis in the top of the third, a leadoff first pitch bunt single on a bunt that actually played out beautifully. It died between home plate and the pitcher's mound. And then Millis had a steal of second base. Now, we know he's a young player. It's early in the season. So, you know, the legs are probably as fresh as they're ever going to be. But man, that was something. The bunt, which by itself was remarkable. And then the stolen base, too, by Millis.
Yeah, I didn't have enough time to go through every game log for Wilson Ramos. So it's possible that the Buffalo once did that as well. Probably unlikely, but I can't confirm that he never did that. Otherwise, I've got to believe that Millis is the only catcher in Nationals history to pull off that 1-2 punch. You know, he's a different kind of catcher than normal. He's young, that helps, but he's thin. He runs well. He has shown an ability to hit at times, and he's got a good arm. Everybody likes him defensively. I don't know in the long run if he's going to be able to do enough of all these things to make it full-time as a big leaguer, either as a number one or number two. But on a day when you wanted to give Riley Adams off because he started the night before and K-Bert Ruiz was feeling sick, it was nice to have somebody you could put back there and trust that they can do a good job both in the catching department and be somewhat of an offensive threat. The shame that they sent him right back down after the game. What's interesting to me, they didn't know Ruiz was sick at the time. They called Millis up on Monday afternoon, and Ruiz played that night. So I don't think they anticipated this. The idea, I think, was going to be to maybe give David the opportunity to have both Ruiz and Adams in the lineup, one of them as a DH, and then still have a backup catcher in case anything went wrong. As it turned out, it's a good thing he was here because he was able to start with Ruiz sick. But now he goes back, and I think we're going to see a pitcher, someone, I'm not sure who, by the time we get to Oakland on Friday.
Yeah, so the Nats, after this loss at the Giants on Wednesday, announced having optioned Millis back to Rochester, did not announce a corresponding roster move. We're not used to this with the Nats shuffling guys back and forth between the major league level and AAA. There are teams that do this with a high frequency. The Nats, for whatever reason, have not been a team that has done that in recent years, but it has been a little tricky here over the last like 48 hours or so. So Josiah Gray goes on the 15-day injured list. That corresponding roster move is calling up Yoan Adone. Adone pitches late night on Tuesday night. Wednesday gets sent down to Rochester. Corresponding move to that is calling up Millis. And now Millis, later in the day on Wednesday, gets optioned back to Rochester. So yeah, it is odd that Millis gets called up for just the one game. But as for Adone, so we talked about this a bit on the last installment of the show. You said, hey, you know, don't just assume that Adone is here to replace Josiah Gray in the rotation until Gray is healthy. So should we presume that someone other than Yoan Adon will be taking that next turn in the rotation in terms of the turn that would be there for Gray?
Yeah, it's going to have to be because you can't option a guy down and then call him back up in less than 10 days unless there was a new injury of some type. So yeah, it will have to be someone else. I thought initially maybe they would try to bring somebody else up to pitch this weekend in Oakland. Obviously a better matchup than waiting until Monday or Tuesday in LA against the Dodgers, but they announced the probables for the weekend and it's everything staying on track. So it's Irvin, Gore, and Trevor Williams for that series. Now they could always change that. Doesn't mean they have to keep that intact, but I thought that might have made some sense. I guess they will go with a reliever maybe for the weekend and then call up a starter for Monday in LA. I'll be curious to see how this all plays out, but you know, Adon did what they needed him to do. He did fine. But like I said the other night, I don't think they viewed him as the long-term answer here. I think ideally it's Jackson Rutledge, although he hasn't pitched much with the off days, everything else, the rainouts they've had in Rochester. So maybe we will actually see someone else like a Mitchell Parker making his major league debut. Although, man, that would be some assignment to get that at Dodger Stadium next week. So still a lot of things to figure out here over the next few days. I do think it's kind of interesting, I'll just say, that the Nats, all of a sudden, like you said, they don't normally do this. They're making moves every day, shuffling guys in and out. They're doing it while the team's out on the West Coast. The Learners are spending a good amount on plane tickets here for those flights from Rochester to San Francisco, and then ultimately maybe one to LA as well. This isn't their usual MO, how they handle these things. So maybe there's a little money left over or some frequent flyer miles they're cashing in over this weekend.
Brings you back to when the Nats AAA affiliate was in Fresno. We long for those days once again, cross-country flights, etc. Yeah, you know, and you think too, if you're calling up a pitcher from the minors, you'd want him starting at Oakland as opposed to at the mighty Dodgers, right? I mean, that's just kind of common sense. Hey, Al Galdi here for Window Nation. Baseball season finally is here. Spring finally is here. And that means a great offer from Window Nation for listeners of the Nats Chat podcast. If your windows are cracked or leaking and or won't open or stay open, now is the time to call Window Nation, which is offering the following deal to listeners of the Nats Chat podcast. 2 free windows for every 2 windows that you buy, plus 0 down, 0 interest, and 0 payments for 24 months. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com and make sure that you tell Window Nation that you want the deal that you heard about from Al Galdi on the Nats Chat podcast. Upgrade the look, feel, and value of your home with great new Window Nation windows. Window Nation is the best, and take advantage of the offer. 2 free windows for every 2 windows that you buy, plus 0 down, 0 interest, and 0 payments for 24 months. 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. That's 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. And make sure that you tell Window Nation that you want the deal that you heard about from Al Galdi on the Nats Chat podcast.
Tim Shover is here to tell you about Game Time. Now that the Steven Strasburg saga has been settled, it's time to look ahead to the 5th anniversary celebration of the World Series as Houston comes to town April 19th through the 21st. Get a panoramic view of your seat on the Game Time app or website before you buy so you can make sure you'll be satisfied on game day. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code NATSCHAT for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code NATSCHAT for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
One the count, two out, a runner at second, a run home, and Corbett delivers. Breaking ball, hooked and lined into right, a base hit. Rounding third, coming home, Fitzgerald. Thomas up with the ball, will make a one-hop throw into second base. The Giants have turned those two hits to start the inning into two runs. It's now San Francisco 5 and Washington 1. Conforto 2-for-3, and he drives in his team-leading 11th run of the year for the Giants.
We've been saying how Davey has been using 3, 4, 5 relievers in games. He only ended up using 2 in this game on Wednesday, and there's an off day on Thursday. So the bullpen actually should be quite rested for this upcoming weekend series at the A's. And I guess we have to commend the Nats starting pitcher on Wednesday for helping to preserve the bullpen, although it's not like he had a good outing. Patrick Corbin was the Nats starting pitcher on Wednesday, and he had an outing that in so many ways captures what has happened with him since his first season with the Nats. So Corbin in this game on Wednesday was charged with 7 runs in 5 2/3 innings. He gave up a whopping 11 hits, which were comprised of a triple, a double, and 9 singles. He recorded just 2 strikeouts. He did issue no walks, and he did throw a good number of strikes, 85 pitches, 58 strikes versus just 27 balls. But I find that so instructive and so telling. If you had to boil down the decline of Corbin to one thing, I would put it as he has been bad because he has given up too much contact due to not generating enough strikeouts. Like, if you had to sum it up in one sentence, I think that sums it up pretty closely and clearly what has happened with Corbin since 2019. So you think about this game on Wednesday. He has a strikes to balls ratio of better than 2-1, 58 strikes versus 27 balls, and yet he still records just 2 strikeouts. And to me, like, that is what has happened to Corbin. That is Corbin's decline in a nutshell. And so he gives up these 11 hits. And yes, some of this was bad luck. These weren't all hard hit balls. But as we know, when you give up a lot of contact, you fall victim to the variance of the batted ball. And we saw that. Man, it felt like every time you looked up, Corbin was giving up a hit in this game.
And you're right. Some of it on weak contact. But the best way to avoid that bad luck from happening is don't even let him make contact at all. He only had 3 swings and misses the entire day. That does not work. You better have perfect command and a whole lot of movement to just get guys to pound the ball on the ground if you're going to do that. And you're right. This is entirely why he has turned into the pitcher that he now is. In 2018 with the Diamondbacks, then 2019 with the Nationals, he was striking out about on average 11 batters per 9 innings. That's a really good rate for a pitcher, starting pitcher especially. Ever since then, the numbers have consistently gone down, 8.2, 7.5, 7.5, 6.2 last season. He is a pitch to contact guy now. That's a tough way to go about it. Some can be successful doing that. I don't think he has the stuff. I think they know he doesn't have the stuff to get away with that. And you better have flawless defense behind you if you're going to get away with that. And the Nationals, at least in this game, did not have flawless defense.
No, and I think the bottom of the second captures everything we're talking about here. So bottom of the second, Corbin allows 3 runs on a triple and 3 singles. Now, there was bad luck in this inning. The triple was a 2-out Nick Ahmed RBI triple on which center fielder Jacob Young had the ball in his glove for what could have been a terrific running catch, but he dropped the ball upon crashing into the outfield wall. So you say, okay, that's a play that could have been made. Yes, but, you know, Corbin on that triple still gave up hard contact, all right? So I'm not going to sit here and kill Jacob Young for not making what would have been an impressive play. Then came Corbin giving up a 2-out broken bat RBI single by Tyler Fitzgerald to left field. Okay, broken bat single. Not much Corbin can do about that. Then we had an odd play. Corbin had Fitzgerald picked off, but first baseman Joey Gallo made a bad throw to second base. And then Fitzgerald actually stole third base. And then Corbin gave up a 2-out RBI infield single by Austin Slater on a grounder to shortstop CJ Abrams on a 1-2 pitch. So it's not like Corbin got tattooed in this inning, save for the RBI triple, which again was a play that could have been made. But again, too much contact, too many hits, and too few strikeouts.
Yeah, he had opportunities to get out of that himself. And sometimes you got to be able to do it on your own. You can't just count on the defense doing it. That was the Giants' first stolen base of the season, believe it or not. Think about how many the Nationals have had. I wonder if after watching the Nats run wild on them the previous two nights, Bob Melvin said, hey, guys, we got to do this a little different. We're not scoring runs ourselves. Let's run on them. And Corbin was not great at holding them on. I know he had him picked off, and you blame that one on Gallo, but there were a couple other stolen bases off of him. And even as a lefty, he's not always great at stopping the running game. I think he can be a little predictable with his move to the plate. So that hurt them as well. So between not getting swings and misses, letting the opponents run on you, and not getting perfectly clean defense behind you, you end up with this. And it felt like so much like a Patrick Corbin start of the last few years, where you say, if just one little thing happens differently, maybe he gets out of that and the damage is minimized. But as soon as he doesn't, it snowballs. You have these big prolonged innings and he can't get out of it because he can't get swings and misses himself. And so you end up, you look at the end of the day, he's got 7 runs and 11 hits charged to him. And, you know, Davey had to leave him out there because I think he needed to give the bullpen a break today, but it never really felt like Corbin was in control of this game at all.
By the way, you mentioned Bob Melvin. He's in his first season as the Giants manager. Is Bob Melvin not like the all-time king of being a manager in the Pacific time zone? This is his 5th different managerial job. Mariners, Diamondbacks, A's, Padres, Giants. Does his agent just insist only on West Coast jobs or jobs out West? Like, how does that work? Every job he gets is a job in the Pacific time zone. I find that bizarre.
It's not a bad life if you think about it. There's some pretty nice cities he's lived in over the course of his managerial career. And a guy who, you know, he's never really won it big. He's made the playoffs several times, but he's never won the World Series. Maybe went to the World Series once, maybe not even been to the World Series. And yet he's widely respected around the game. He keeps getting jobs. He's held on to jobs for a long time. He's very quietly just a good, solid manager. And you know who followed him here from San Diego, who was on his staff last year? That's our friend Matt Williams, who was here coaching third base, doing well. He's healthy after having the cancer scare last year. It was good to see him. It was also good to see FP Santangelo on this trip working out here in radio in San Francisco. So a lot of Nats connections on the Giants side of the equation.
And Bob Melvin, the lord of the Pacific time zone. Who knew? The Nats bullpen on Wednesday overall was fine. 2 relievers officially combined for 2 1/3 scoreless innings. Derek Law did allow an inherited runner to score, but he officially tossed 1 1/3 scoreless innings, including a perfect bottom of the 7th. And Tanner Rainey tossed a perfect bottom of the 8th. Boy, did it stand out just from a standpoint of Nats down 7-1, and that's when Davey goes to Rainey. Like, he very clearly has been relegated to mop-up duty as he tries to find his way back from Tommy John surgery that he underwent in August of 2022.
Yeah, coming into the game, I was thinking to myself, okay, what relievers are we going to see today, knowing what's happened the last few days? And in my mind, I thought, okay, Derek Law hasn't pitched. All right, Matt Barnes, he pitched the other day, but he didn't pitch the previous day. In my head, I'm like, all right, who else is there? And I couldn't come up with Tanner Rainey's name in my mind. I think that tells you, unfortunately, something. Now, he had a good inning, 1-2-3, probably one of the better innings he's had this year. But it's pretty clear that they are going to try to get him right by pitching in low leverage spots before they really think of him in other ones. Right now, you know, it's early and these things change, but it seems to me that it's Finnegan and Harvey, obviously, 8th and 9th. And then I think it's Jordan Weems and Dylan Floro are the two that Davey seems to trust the most right now in those setup roles. And over time, maybe Derek Law, maybe Matt Barnes, and maybe Tanner Rainey eventually, but he's going to have to overtake, I think, several guys on the depth chart before he is the one that they're calling upon in high leverage spots late in games.
I like some of what we've seen from Robert Garcia. Do you think he's an A-team bullpen candidate?
He is. He's the one lefty, so you're going to find the right spots there to match up. If there is a spot in the 6th or 7th inning and the other team has good lefties coming up, he's going to be the guy. Davey liked him last year, liked him all spring. It's funny because he actually pitched the worst of all the lefties who were competing for jobs this spring, and he still made the team. And that said to me, okay, they clearly do like him. And I think he has looked pretty good. He throws hard. He's a big, strong lefty. I'm most interested to see when they really get into these matchups. I guess he faced Harper during the Phillies series, but I want to see more of that against maybe the Dodgers when we see him facing Freddie Freeman, against the Braves and some of their guys. Let's see how he does, especially as there's more of a book on him and teams have a scouting report and know how to go about trying to face him.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Here's your James Wood and Dylan Cruz updates for the games played on Wednesday. In a 12-11 loss in Buffalo for Rochester, Wood hit second playing left field in AAA. 2-for-4, scored 2 runs, drew 2 walks. He's hitting .379 on the season. Down to AA, Cruz was hitting cleanup, went 0-for-3 with a pair of strikeouts. He's hitting .238 thus far. 9-8 loss for Harrisburg at Altoona. By the way, Brady House, he was DH. 2-for-5 in the affair. Now back to the show.
The kick, and here it comes. Swing and a fly ball hit to deep right field. Back goes Slater at the warning track, looking up, going, going, and gone. Goodbye. That's caught right in the first row on top of Levi's landing over the 25-foot wall in right field. Bang, zoom goes Joey Gallo with his third homer of the year and RBI number 4. And I guess that wrist is pretty much okay. On a home run by Gallo, the Nationals on the board here in the second. It's Washington 1 and San Francisco nothing.
All right, I do want to bring this up. So a big item in Major League Baseball on Wednesday was the Orioles calling up the consensus number one prospect in the sport, second baseman / shortstop, Jackson Holliday. The O's on Wednesday morning announced that they had selected his contract. The date for Wednesday, April 10th, it is this Saturday, April 13th, that we have what we'll call service time day. That is the cutoff day to where if you call a player up after that date, on that date and moving forward, you can get that extra year of team control. Although the issue now is complicated by some new provisions in the latest collective bargaining agreement. But I bring this up because of James Wood. James Wood is doing well for AAA Rochester. He had 2 doubles on Tuesday. He, as of games through Tuesday, was tied for second in the International League with 5 doubles. His .560 slugging percentage ranked 5th in the International League. His overall numbers 9-for-25 with 7 walks and just 5 strikeouts. Once we hit April 13th, and again, this is complicated by the PPI, the Prospect Promotion Incentive, which is tied to players who are ranked on preseason prospects lists. So if you're a top 100 guy on 2 of these designated 3 lists who are eligible to gain a full year of service time, even if you're not up for the entire defined season for a service time accruing. But once we get to April 13th, do you think that we need to be on James Wood watch? He's doing well. Dylan Cruz has been struggling, although he had a good game on Tuesday. But Wood is doing well. We're about to hit that key date. To what degree should we be monitoring and thinking about James Wood potentially being called up?
I think it's perfectly appropriate to watch every day and see how he's doing and wonder if he's getting close. And I think he, you know, is relatively close. I don't sense that their decisions with him are based on a specific date like that. I do think they want him to play every day at AAA and give him a chance to just get comfortable there before they make the move. You never know what might happen at the big league level. We know Trey Lipscomb was going to start the year at AAA, and then Nick Senzel gets hurt on opening day, and all of a sudden Lipscomb is up here. So things can happen in the outfield where all of a sudden there's an opening. I think at the moment they're satisfied with what they have here. It would, to make that move, it's going to require probably releasing a veteran like a Jesse Winker or Eddie Rosario. I guess you could send Jacob Young down now. He's been up here, but he's done pretty well, and I think they like what he offers them. So I think the decision is really going just to be based on how James Wood is playing and their internal evaluation of him and his readiness. I don't think it's going to have anything to do with any specific date. I think ideally, if it works out, they would much rather call him up to make his debut at home than have it be on the West Coast late at night. I was a little surprised the Orioles, because it's not like they did this for an injury. They just called up Holiday while the team is at Fenway Park, and then he'll make his home debut on Friday. I would think in their perfect world, the Nats would rather have James Wood debut in DC and try to drum up some excitement for that. So I'm not really on James Wood alert right now. I'm watching him. I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later, but I'm not personally anticipating it happening on this trip unless somebody goes down or the team is really struggling offensively and there's a reason to say, hey, let's get this guy's bat in our lineup.
This PPI thing is really interesting. It is extremely complicated. Like, if you read about it, the various aspects of it, the provisions to it, it is like so tedious. And if you're looking for like a good summation of it online, good luck, because I've looked for something like that. There really isn't one. I actually downloaded the entire CBA to try to figure this out. But the bottom line is, it makes it easier for a highly regarded prospect to get credit for a season of service time, even if he's called up post that service time date. But it also will reward a team if the PPI player, and again, you have to qualify for this by being on a preseason top 100 prospects list, two out of three. There are three designated lists, Baseball America, ESPN, and MLB Pipeline. But if the player gets called up and he gets the Rookie of the Year award or finishes in the top three of the voting for MVP or Cy Young for his league for any of his pre-arbitration seasons, the team gets a pick between a first and second round of an MLB draft. So it does actually do a good job of incentivizing teams to call up these prospects and not be so rigid with this service time date. But it is complicated. And it was funny to me, Baseball America a few weeks ago on Twitter put out a correction for who are the PPI eligible players for this season. And I think that speaks to how complex this is. Like, this is Baseball America, right? Its job is to monitor this stuff and understand this stuff. And even Baseball America got thrown off. So it's a little difficult to track and sort of digest. But it is a big part now of the conversation and the calculus of when to call up these prospects.
Sure. But I also think this is why, knowing Mike Rizzo and the way the Nationals seem to operate, I really think they're going to mostly make all these decisions based on the readiness of the player and not try to finagle this in any way, because it is really hard to do that. As you said, it's not just about what happens this year, but it could be what happens next year, the year after that. If they think a guy is ready to play in the big leagues and there's an obvious opening for him here, I think they'll make that move regardless of what date it is or what implications there are for that. There are things you would like ideally for it all to work out, but as we know, baseball doesn't work like that. Bryce Harper made his debut at Dodger Stadium after Ryan Zimmerman got injured. So you never know what might transpire to create the scenario. But I like what baseball's doing here. You know, they are trying to make an effort to say, hey, these guys who are really good and clearly good enough to make the big leagues either on opening day or early in the season, and they're being held back for only one reason, a reason that we have said, if you're a team's GM, you completely understand why you hold off doing that, because you want that extra year of control. So it's trying to incentivize that, but also incentivizing for the player. If you go out there and you perform well, like, you could still get your full year of service time and become a free agent sooner and hit arbitration, all those things sooner. So I think it's a good compromise. It is, unfortunately, a complicated compromise that even the smartest baseball rules experts out there, I don't know there's going to be really a way to game this system, because there's too many things that can change over the course, not just right now, but in the year or two that follow.
And I think from a fan perspective, you're like, all right, let me just move on to something else. Because, I mean, it's like reading the tax code, trying to figure out the who, what, where, when, and why with this PPI system. But again, I do think that the system makes sense. One other thing with prospects. So MLB Pipeline's top 100 prospects does get modified as guys graduate from prospect status. And the latest alterations to the top 100 list have resulted in another Nats prospect becoming a top 100 prospect. Yohandy Morales now is the number 100 prospect in baseball per MLB Pipeline. So the Nats have four top 100 prospects, all of whom are position players. Dylan Cruz, outfielder, number 7. James Wood, outfielder, number 14. Brady House, third baseman, number 45. And Morales, third baseman, number 100. This is encouraging for a lot of different reasons, including that he is a non-first round pick. And we've talked about the lack of success the Nats have had with non-first round picks. The Nats took this guy in the second round of the 2023 draft out of the University of Miami. He's like Brady House. He's a third baseman, has the great nickname Yo-Yo, and he's doing pretty well here so far. So this is encouraging that he gets to this status of being a top 100 prospect.
Yeah, you know, was highly touted coming out of Miami. And there was some thought that he had like first round talent, and the Nats were able to get him with the second pick of the second round, and has already come through the system. He's already at double A, which is a great sign. We saw him a little bit this spring. He's a big, strong kid who can hit. They've had him some at first base, anticipating that given the third base talent they have in House and Lipscomb, that maybe his future would be at first base, where they don't really have any obvious prospects in the long run. I'm curious to see how he does this year. And it's, you know, internally they've liked him, but it's nice to see that the industry seems to view him as highly as the Nationals do. And, you know, it's going to be several years till we really know all this, but I do feel like there is more depth of talent now in their system and more players who were not the obvious blue chip early first round picks who at least have a chance at being good in the big leagues for them. And that would be such a win for the organization. And it's funny because these are all guys who were drafted by the previous regime in terms of their scouting department. Remember, they changed that this winter. We don't know yet what Danny Haas and Brad Selick, who are now in charge of that, we don't know how they're going to do, but these are Chris Klein draft picks. And it would be funny, ironic, I don't know what the right word for it would be, if 3-4 years from now we're saying, boy, they finally hit it big with some second round, third round, fourth round picks. And it was actually the prior scouting director who was responsible for that.
Yeah, which also makes the revamping of the front office in the middle of the rebuild even more peculiar. But what was done is done. So yeah, you answered my next question. House and Morales, each at double A, each a third baseman. You could make the case, hey, they're both going to be arriving at the major league level at around the same time, but it is House who will take precedence. He'll be the third baseman and Morales will have to be moved to first base.
That seems to be the sense that I have there. Remember, they made Brady House a third baseman last year because he came up originally as a shortstop. So they seem very committed to him there. And Morales, while he gets some time there, there was an obvious, well, put him at first. I mean, it's also the reason that Lipscomb, when he was at AA last year, the moment that House got moved up, he knew, okay, well, I guess I better move to second. So they have some moving parts there. We know they're not all going to pan out. You never know who's going to make it when. So I don't think they're going to make Morales permanently a first baseman. But the sense I get is that they're certainly viewing that as a, you know, likely destination if everything works out the way they hope it does.
Well, we have a shout out that we'd like to deliver. A happy 28th birthday to Becca L., a supreme Nats fan. Much love from your family, friends, and cat. Even the cat gets in on the act. So happy birthday to Becca. And thank you for listening to the Nats Chat podcast.
We're big in the animal population. I don't know if that shows up in our analytics, but I've heard anecdotal evidence that says that pets love to listen to us when they're just at home by themselves all day. So if you have the ability, you know, the Amazon Echo or something, put on the podcast, let the pets listen to our voices throughout the day while you're at work.
And we believe that that is an actual cat, not the big cat, Andres Galarraga. So, but we'll have to double check that. I guess I can't say that with complete certainty. Well, hit us up on X at @Nats_chat. Email the show, natschatpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on YouTube. Just search Nats Chat. Our YouTube handle is @NatsChatPodcast. We have a website that we invite you to check out as well, natschatpodcast.com. All Nationals radio highlights on Nats Chat are courtesy of 106.7 The Fan. For Mark Zuckerman, I'm Al Galdi. We thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the Nats Chat Podcast.
Now the lefty's ready. Looking at the runner at first, kicks, delivers to the plate, and Wood belts it high in the air to deep center field. Back goes Sanoa at the warning track, at the wall, and it is caught. Goodbye! For the second day in a row, bang, zoom goes James Wood to the right of the 400-foot marker and landing at the base of the batter's eye screen in center field. It's a two-run shot to tie the game here in the fifth inning. Two games, two homers for James Wood. It's the Nationals 2 and the Marlins 2.
And that was on a 78-mile-per-hour breaking ball, the same pitch that he flailed at earlier in the at-bat. And that's a big boy home run here at Roger Dean Chevrolet Stadium.